40. Greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We begin today's show in Greece, where runners from around the world will gather on Sunday for the Athens Marathon. Now, ahead of that race, our Sunny Side of Sports contributor Andy Edwards talked with Milton Rotich of Kenya, who tells Andy that he believes he's returned to the form that helped him win marathons in Casablanca and Algiers in 2013 and 2014. This year, Rotich hopes to take advantage of a tough course in Athens to not only win, but set a course record.
One of the key men looking ahead to the Athens Marathon, the authentic marathon on Sunday, is Milton Rotich of Kenya. He's coming here as one of the favourites. It's his first time on what is the classic course, a tough course, the Olympic course. But Milton has put in some good performances at the marathon already in his career. So Milton, you've had a busy 2017. You've already run two marathons, one in the USA and the other in Morocco, in Agadir. Yeah. So how are you feeling coming into the Athens Marathon for the first time?
Yeah, I've done two marathons this year, and coming to Athens Marathon is a great opportunity for me to maybe try to do my to come under 2:10. Yeah.
Well, of course, the course record is just outside 2:10, so that would be really good. Now, your best is 2 hours, 8 minutes, 30-odd, which you ran in 2013. So that's 4 years ago in Casablanca in Morocco. Yeah. You haven't quite got close to that yet. Have there been injury problems or reasons why you haven't run as fast as that?
Yeah, I did 2:09 in 2014. And then after that year, I had an injury in 2016. Then this year, that's when I started performing. My form is slowly coming back, yeah.
Is it a fine line? Runners like you are running at their peak. It's top-level distance running. And is it easy, in a way, to pick up an injury because you're pushing yourself in the training camps a lot?
Yeah, you know, when you are training for marathon, you do a lot of workout. That's when you get injured, but that's part of running. You have to, at some point, you have to go some through injuries, and that's normal.
When you got injured or when you were coming back from injury, did you change anything in your training to try and make sure you didn't get injured again?
Yes, I did. I used to do a track for speed, but now I'm not doing a track for speed, and some workout like long runs I used to do four long runs in a month. But when I got injured, I decided to reduce to two long runs. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because, you know, most runners think of whatever their level, not just elite, do one long run a week, and that's a kind of part of their religion, you know. Yeah. But you say you cut down to actually just doing two a month, only two,
yeah.
And you found you've improved?
Yeah, the two long runs, like I'm doing four, but the two I'm going slow, at slow pace, like 4 minutes per kilometer. But the other one I do 3:25 per kilometer. You see the difference? I'm doing like this week, after I do slow, long run, and then after 1 week, I do a faster one. Yeah.
Well, that is interesting. So you're doing four long runs, but two of them are less intense, and then the other two are more intense.
Yeah. So,
and you feel that you've benefited from that kind of variety?
Yeah, I did a lot. I don't have any injury problems again after doing that. And performance is slowly coming to where I was before.
Well, that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure you've heard about the Athens course. It's not easy. It's hilly.
Yes.
Have you done anything in particular in preparation for this course?
Yeah. When I was beginning my workouts, the first 3 weeks in August, I was doing hill walk for 1 hour every Monday. Yeah, and that, I think, it has helped me a lot to prepare for this marathon.
Well, Milton Rotich of Kenya, one of the fastest men going into the Athens Marathon 2017. Wish you all the best. And let's see if that interesting combination of the speed work and just sometimes varying the intensity works out on Sunday. Milton, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And he also spoke with Kenyan Mary Kitani, who's vying for the Best Marathon Runner of the Year award, set to be decided Friday evening in Athens. Kitani is not only hoping to win that award, but after finishing second in the New York City Marathon last week, she's hoping to beat the women's field in Athens.
Mary Kitani's had a great year. She's in Athens. She's one of the candidates for the Ames Best Marathon Runner of the Year Awards. And she was second in New York a week ago. And, of course, broke the women's only world record in London in April. Looking back on 2017, did you expect to run as well as you have done?
Thank you so much. I think what I can say is that actually I've been trying to do well since January of 2017, and actually I thought I will close well in New York, but if I can say is that I was affected in New York because I had an infection, and that made me not run well the way I was expecting. But in any case, I finished second, but I thank God for that opportunity, because I thought maybe I would have run maybe a PB or even fast. But for me, finishing second, and also the weather was not 100%, but actually what I can say, the problem with me actually was not the weather, but about my body. And you cannot tell, because after Saturday afternoon is where I feel as if my body was not well. And I say, it's okay, let me just try my best tomorrow. And I ran the way I did, and I was just okay with my results, because I knew if I was okay, I was even to run better, to do more than last year, because I know last year I ran 2:24, so maybe I could have tried to lower my PB in New York this year, but it's well, because sometimes sport is just a sport. You cannot say how it will be. And for me, I think I have more in store. So
we're in Athens. We're talking in Athens. And I'm just wondering, Athens is the original marathon, the ancient legend of the marathon. I know it's a tough course. Have you ever thought one day, perhaps in the later stages of your career, you might be tempted to run the Athens marathon?
I can say that Athens actually is really nice, and it's a nice city. And of course, I know the course is similar to New York City Marathon. So I think maybe in future I would love to come and try one to test how it is. And also, I know that Athens is a bad race. That's where they start to run a marathon. So for me, I'm happy to be in this beautiful city of Athens.
Mary Kitani, thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed, Mary.
Okay, thank you.
Our thanks to Andy Edwards for those reports. tune in Monday when Andy will be back on the show with a look at the winners and top finishers at the Athens Marathon. And now with the latest sports news from the African continent, here's another one of our Sunny Side of Sports contributors, Samson Omale.
We begin with the third and last round of AFCON qualifiers for the Russia 2018 FIFA World Cup, scheduled to close this weekend, with three of the five sports at next year's tournament still to be determined. Egypt and Nigeria have secured their spots, but there is still all to play for in groups A, C, and D. Nigerian coach Gerard Ross says he will field his best team against Algeria.
All the games are important. It's right that we are already qualified, so the result, it's not the most important. The most important in this game will be to make a good game. It's an opportunity to see a lot of players who didn't play so much in the qualifiers because we had our team and now we have six injuries.
In Group A, Tunisia only require 1 point at home to Libya to return to the World Cup stage for the first time since 2006. In the event of a Libyan victory, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia could still make it if Congo DR fail to defeat Guinea. Ghana may already be out of the running for the FIFA World Cup Russia 2018, but the Black Stars coach Kwesi Appiah says his team is motivated to end the campaign positive as they host Egypt in the ultimate game at Cape Coast on Sunday.
Make sure that we play our hearts out, we do not let the nation down, and we just need everyone to come over here and support us.
In the other game, it will be Congo versus Uganda, and Uganda's interim coach Moses Basena is forever grateful for the dream chance to manage at the biggest stage in Ugandan football.
For me to lead the country into these very important games, it's been a honor and a pleasure for me.
In Group C, which include Cote d'Ivoire, Morocco, Gabon and Mali, the situation is quite simple. The Moroccans will qualify if they avoid defeat against Cote d'Ivoire in Abidjan on Saturday. The Ivorians, meanwhile, must win if they are to top the group and pip Morocco to take the spot for Group C. Still on the World Cup African qualifiers, South Africa, Senegal, Burkina Faso and Cape Verde make up Group D. On paper, all of the teams in the group have a chance of qualifying, especially as there are actually three matches still to be played, including South Africa, Senegal, which originally took place in November 2016, but will now be replayed on the 10th of November 2017, following FIFA's decision. In the event of Senegal pocketing 3 points in South Africa, they will be assured of finishing in first place and traveling to Russia next year. And away from the qualifiers, the bitter infighting over who runs Sierra Leone football has taken a remarkable twist with FIFA overturning a decision by the country's national FA to remove Isha Johansson from her role as president right in the middle of a court case in which she is charged with corruption. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young today, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up! Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Turning now to tennis and a young American rising up the ranks. 19-year-old Francis Tiafoe learned how to play tennis in his hometown of College Park, Maryland, right outside of our VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C., and turned pro in 2015. Now, in the 2 years since, he's reached a career-high ranking of number 60 in the world, he's beaten the number 7-ranked player in the world, and nearly defeated the biggest name in men's tennis in the first round of the 2017 U.S. Open. Earlier this week, Sonny and I spoke with Francis here at our VOA headquarters about his success so far, his life as a young tennis player, and even what it's like to have his own bobblehead figure. That's right, there is a Francis Tiafoe bobblehead. That's how you know you've made it in sports. But Sonny kicked things off by asking about social media and one particular hashtag that Tiafoe has been using quite a lot in his young career.
So I thought I'd begin with a hashtag. I was scrolling through your Facebook feed, and one of the hashtags I see there, big foe on the come up, big foe on the come up. Can you talk about that and what it means to you, that hashtag?
Well, big foe is my nickname. A lot of people call me foe, but yeah, some people call me big foe. So that's pretty much a nickname. And then, I was joking around once and decided to put on the come up at the end, and it sounded cool and it flowed. So, I've been using it on Instagram, Twitter, everything. So, pretty much just means, just me on the come up, me trying to just keep going and just try to reach the top.
I like it. On the come up, does that sort of symbolize how you're a rising tennis player in the USA?
Yeah, it symbolizes a lot of things. I've started from, pretty low, and, now I've been on the come up since the beginning. So, and I'm still on it just because I've been rising. Doesn't mean it's going to stop. So, yeah, that's what pretty just reminds me I still got a long way to go.
Yeah, Francis, as one of these up-and-coming Americans, how do you feel about the perception that many people say American men's tennis is in a slump? Does that put added pressure on you as a young American player, or is that maybe a motivator to move up and do well?
I think everyone says American tennis has been on a slump, blah, 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 but we also hit a generation where, it's possibly the best generation in tennis with Novak, Roger, Rafa, Murray. These guys there just have a million slams, just those four. So, it's been tough for anyone to really break through. So I wouldn't say that American tennis has been bad at all. I think we have a ton of great guys coming through, and we'll see how we all turn up. I think we all push each other every day and all very supportive of each other. So I think we have a great crew that can easily run the sport of tennis.
Francis, you mentioned Roger, and I know you had that great 5-set match with him earlier this year. Can you talk about that and how it has affected your career? Has it boosted your confidence?
Yeah, that was a heartbreaker, but I took a lot of positives from that for sure. I played unbelievable. Put myself in a position to win against arguably the greatest player of all time, and I've been playing with some really good tennis, I'm really excited for next year. I think next year is going to be a really big year for me as far as breaking through and taking the next leap in my career as far as a top player on the tour.
One of the exciting things this year is you played world team tennis for the Washington Castles, which is your hometown world team tennis team. You grew up just outside of Washington, D.C. What was that experience like, and how did it help you this season, especially playing in front of such a positive crowd? And I have to ask you too, what's it like having your own bobblehead?
that whole week was great. Mark Hein, puts an unbelievable event on. Shoots the player is great. Everything around is great. The atmosphere is, better than any. So being there was unbelievable, and I'm going to do that for many more years for sure. Having my own bobblehead the final night was unbelievable. a lot of people went and got it, so I hope I could live up to that, and hopefully people want to buy many more bobbleheads down the stretch.
World team tennis, Francis, maybe not as high stakes as life on the ATP tour. Can you tell our VOA listeners what it's like before a big match against somebody like Roger Federer? What is it like in the locker room before you go out on the court against someone of Federer's status?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got nerves, you got a lot of things going through your head, and obviously you know the crowd's gonna be packed, you know the crowd's gonna be against you. He's a fan favorite pretty much wherever he goes. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just another match. You know, there's a tournament every week. There's a chance to make a dent every week. So you know, you don't want to make a situation bigger than it needs to be. You know, just go out there, give your best stuff, and you know, respect everyone, fear no one. That's pretty much one of my big mottos. And I mean, because at the end of the day, like, I mean, they're trying to do the same thing as you, and that's win. So you know, give your best stuff, and just leave it all out there.
When you're approaching a match, and I'm sure you must have some friends on the tour, are you talking with them beforehand? I mean, if say you're going up against somebody like Jack Sock, would you talk to him before the match? Maybe, hey, what did you have to eat last night, or something like that, or what, you know, more casual conversation, or is it you're just focused on the match at hand?
Yeah, I mean, me and Jack's probably one of my best friends on tour. Him, Kyrgios, and a lot of the younger guys. A lot of guys on tour, you know, pretty to themselves, pretty locked in 24/7. Not much personality going on with them, but you know, they're there for a job, and I respect it. But you know, I'm a pretty laid back guy, and you know, I mean, a lot of the guys that will talk to me before I play, I will. If they don't, and that's also fine. But yeah, for me, I'm usually with my team and just keep it relaxed, keep it chill, not too serious, and then you know, as it gets closer to it, you know, try to lock it in and go over the game plan and just try to get ready to rock.
On Monday, we'll have part two of our interview, where we'll look at Tiafoe's connection to Sierra Leone and his hopes for his future tennis career. And a new partnership is going to bring us soccer coverage like we've never seen before. Now, in recent years, we've seen two trends emerge in sports coverage. First, social networks and online companies are buying the rights to broadcast sporting events, taking sports programming from the television and radio to the computer and the smartphone. And second, coverage of sports teams is now non-stop. It's not just about watching the actual matches or games, but watching practices, warm-ups, and other behind-the-scenes content. Well, now e-commerce website Amazon.com is combining both of those trends for a brand new video series. Amazon announced this week that they're going behind the scenes with Manchester City for a new series that will follow the team for the entire 2017-2018 Premier League season. And the cost for that access? A cool 10 million British pounds. Now, this isn't an entirely new concept. Amazon has done this before in the National Football League with their series All or Nothing, following the Arizona Cardinals in 2015 and the St. Louis Rams in 2016 as the team prepared to relocate to Los Angeles. But this is the first time they're expanding into the Premier League. Man City fans are expressing their excitement on social media, with many saying it offers yet another chance to watch their favorite team. But with this expanded coverage, some are naturally wondering, is this the future of sports coverage? Will it all be behind-the-scenes programming going forward, or will we actually get to watch any games? And speaking of games, the Seattle Seahawks took on the Arizona Cardinals last night in a Thursday night football matchup. And among the people paying tribute in that game to veterans, Michael Bennett of the National Football League Seattle Seahawks. Now, Bennett's been one of the players kneeling during the national anthem to protest the treatment of African Americans in the U.S., but last night he and his teammates stood. After the game, he told reporters that they chose to stand to make clear that their protest was not a protest against U.S. service members, as the United States marks Veterans Day today. And we're going to see more of those tributes, I'm sure, over the weekend in the National Football League. And that wraps up the November 10th Veterans Day edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks to our VOA engineer. And thank all of you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington. Have a great weekend, everybody. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
November 11th is Veterans Day in the United States, a day to remember those who served in this nation's armed forces and to honor the sacrifice of those who perished in the service of their country. The observance is not limited to the United States. Most countries that were involved in the First World War commemorate this day. That's because November 11, 1918, marks the day on which an armistice signed by the Allied powers and Germany went into effect, ending the bloody conflict that was, at the time, called the War to End All Wars. This rosy sentiment notwithstanding, since the end of the First World War, not one single decade passed that was not shaped by a war, be it conflicts in Korea and Indochina, in South Asia or the Balkans, battles in North Africa and the Middle East, or the largest, bloodiest conflict of them all, the Second World War. American soldiers have fought and died side by side with our allies to defend our common homelands, our people, our ideals. Since the first volley of gunfire in the Revolution, brave Americans in every generation have answered the call of duty and won victory for freedom in its hour of need, said President Donald Trump. Today, a new generation of American patriots are fighting to win the battle against terrorism, risking their lives to protect our citizens from an enemy that uses the murder of innocents to wage war on humanity itself. Today we remember those who stood up and defended not only America and its people, but those of other nations as well. Today we honor the sacrifice of those men and women who fought and lost their lives across all wars on every continent. We can never replace them, said President Trump. We can never repay them. But we can always remember. And today, that is what we are doing. We remember.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.